So I think that many of you are sort of seeing a trend in all of these talks. They are all about big data. You are looking at tens of thousands of teams, in some cases hundreds of thousands of teams. You are looking about hundreds of thousands of individuals. You are looking at tens of millions of scientific papers. And the power of all this data is that you can start to find signals that are actually rather weak. And another aspect of many of these data sets is that they are longitudinal. You don't look at a single year. You look at an extended period of time. And actually, if you think about it, this is no different in this spirit of extension versus convention of what has been going on, for instance, in medicine with the Framingham Heart Study, right? A lot of the things that we know nowadays about what gives us heart problems was learned from studying one group of people, several thousand, over decades. And so this is sort of the same spirit. By looking at lots of data, we are actually able to start to find really nuggets of insight, things that no one in their own life and own experience would have a high likelihood of discovering, right? Each one of us never read millions of papers, never participated in thousands of teams. So these data enable us to sort of multiply our experiences and find things that otherwise would be impossible. Now, the thing that I'm going to talk about is related to one aspect of teamwork. We all think about teams and bringing diversity, bringing different knowledges, bringing different resources. But one of the things that happens very frequently with teams is that there is a mentorship relationship going on, right? We have graduate students that, as they are doing their work and they are collaborating with us, we are transmitting knowledge to them. So the way in which we transmit this new knowledge, the ability to do science, is also a tremendously important aspect of teamwork. We want to make sure that individuals that are new to an area are getting the best training and the best mentoring possible so they can go to onto the best possible careers. And this is not new. I mean, all the funding agencies worry about mentorship. They ask you for plans about how you plan to mentor your postdocs. They ask you what is your experience training graduate students and all of that stuff. And what we did was try to put some more quantitative knowledge into this. And to do that, we went over a relatively large database. And we tried to answer two things. One of them is, does mentor fecundity and, you know, I used to joke with my first graduate student that he was like my oldest son. You know, it's sort of, it's all my children, I love them, you know, it's feel very close to them. So you can think about it in Dell's way, right? You have many children, many people that train, you have few. One of the questions that I was wondering is, does mentor fecundity correlate with other measures of academic success and productivity? Now, in some areas, you may think the answer is obviously yes, because if you have a large group, lots of people working to you that you are mentoring, you are going to create more papers, write more grants. So it was fortunate that we were able to get data on mathematicians who typically do not have that many students and typically do not write papers with their students. So it's not that they are being more productive because they have more students. You could think that they could be less productive, right? Because if they have more students to mentor, less time for their own work. And the other thing that would be equally important is, does the fecundity of a mentor affect the fecundity of their trainees? And if we find this correlation, then we could be learning something about the productivity of a trainee based on their mentor's productivity, okay? So to do this study, we made use of the Mathematics Genealogy Project. I'm not sure if I'm enough of a mathematician to say that mathematicians are all geeks. You know that joke that if it is my own people, I can make fun of them. So it's sort of, but they love this idea of what is my lineage. And so there is this lineage that covers 141,000 mathematicians. And it covers a very extended period of time since about the 1600s. But starting on the 1900s, the data starts to be really complete. And so we actually have 7,259 mathematicians for whom we know how many people they trained and who it was that they trained. And these are mathematicians that got their PhD between 1900 and 1960. The idea is that if you got your PhD by 1960, by now your career is likely over. There might be one or two people for which the career is not over, but you know, on 7,000, that's not too much. Now, one of the things that you'd like to know is, does fecundity of these mathematicians correlate with accolades, with being known as being someone that is very good? This was actually very challenging to try to answer that question. You know, you could think about, we could look at people that won the Fields Medal, which is the equivalent of the Nobel for mathematicians, but that's a very small number. And so we thought the next best thing is finding out who was elected a member of the National Academy of Science. So we had 469 members of the National Academy. Not all of the people in this database could have been elected members of the National Academy. If you are not in the US or a US citizen or amazingly good, you are not going to be inducted into the academy. And what you can find out is that the probability of having more trainees during your career is considerably larger here in the tail by almost two orders of magnitude. The probability that if you are a member of the National Academy, that you have 40 or more trainees is 100 times larger than if you were not elected to the National Academy. For some of these mathematicians, we were also able to find their publications. And what we found out here is that as the fecundity grow, and this is a log scale going from 1 to 100, and this is the number of publications that also on log scale and goes from 0 to 1,000, you can see that there is an increase, except right there at the end, of the number of publications with the number of individuals that you trained. And for people that were elected to the National Academy, that signal is even stronger. So this suggests very strongly that there is a correlation between number of individuals that you train and number of publications and recognition, even though in this particular field you don't gain much by it directly. Now that we saw that there is that correlation, we could ask, does mentor fecundity impact fecundity of proteges? This is significant because if I train a lot of students, one of my students is likely to train a lot of students if there is a correlation. And if they train a lot of students, means that they are going to be doing really lots of good work, right? So this would be very important to figure out. So what we did is we divided the mentors by their number of children, K. So people that trained fewer than three people, between 3 and 10, and more than 10, okay? And we looked just to see, could there be any change during time? We looked at different periods in their career. Now you could ask, where did we pull this thing? Did we pull it from a hat? No, the truth is that what happens is that the distribution of number of children, of proteges that you train, decays exponentially. And for people that are in academia and train a fair number of proteges, the average number is 10. So you have more than 10, train more than the average, between 3 and 10, sort of another group, and then the group of people that train a small number. So let me ask you a question, okay? First, do you expect there to be a correlation or not? And we don't have clickers, so if you guys could be so kind as to put your arm in the air when I ask, do you believe that there is a correlation? Okay. Do you believe there is no correlation? Do you believe that there is anti-correlation? Okay, shame on you that didn't raise your arm for any of these cases. Okay, for the people that believe there is correlation, where do you think the correlation is going to be the strongest? Holly, yes.
Early.
What?
Early.
So early is when you...
Yeah, like
the people that you train, okay. What about this way? Where do you think, so you think that these people are going to train more, better? And, okay, you can see that Holly is a cynic. Okay. So Holly is a cynic, but she's correct. So people that train a lot do the best training earlier in their career and actually seem to be deleterious later in their career. And what was also unexpected, because this is essentially anti-correlation, you have fewer, you train fewer people, and the people you train go on into train more. So anti-correlations was correct. So, you know, I have no time to cover how we analyze this. The paper is going to come out in Nature in a few weeks to a month. So hopefully we'll be able to take a look at it. And I will leave this for discussion. I mean, I could come up with hypotheses about why this is happening, but I will not do that and leave it for us to discuss later. Thank you very much for your attention.